Hi, everyone. It's my pleasure today to introduce somebody I've known for probably 5 years now, give or take a little bit. His name's Dan Kandel from the beautiful Northeast. Used to be Massachusetts. Now it's Connecticut.
Yes. Yep. I'm actually coming to you from my office in Massachusetts. I live in Connecticut, but the commute's only about a half an hour or so.
Right. And so he's been a hypnotist. Well, first of all, how did you get into hypnosis?
So, you know, Will, it's really interesting, and people keep telling me my story back to me, and they say, oh, you're that young kid that got started when he was like 13 or 14, aren't you? We heard about you. And I said, yeah, I'm that kid. Now I'm that guy. And it's interesting. I had some learning challenges. My grandmother had passed away when I was 12, and I was really connected to her. Growing up with a family of drug addiction and alcoholism in the family, I was kind of the outcast, and I was the black sheep of the family. So I was really depressed. I just didn't feel like I really fit in. And I saw a stage hypnotist perform at a campground when I went on a family vacation. And I kind of memorized some of the stuff he did. So I went and I tried it with my friends in the basement when I'd gotten home from that camping trip, and it worked. So the first thing were the complaints that came in from the parents of my friends. They called my mom and they said, you know, your son just hypnotized my son in the basement to think he's Dolly Parton. What gives? So that was my first introduction into hypnosis. And then my parents found out I enjoyed it. They bought me a book. The first book was The Beginner's Guide to Hypnosis by William Hewitt. And I read the book from cover to cover, and I remembered everything about that book. And there was a part in it, how to hypnotize yourself for focus and better grades and such. So I did that. And within 3 weeks, my grades went from C's and D's all the way up to straight A's. And my teachers were actually really supportive of and embracing with this. And they said, can he teach other students how to do this? So I started teaching it to other students. Well, then the school decided that I should go and get a professional training. So that's where I took Jerry Valley's stage hypnosis course. And I started doing stage shows and started traveling while I was in high school. And I have newspaper clippings I just found the other day when I was 15, 16, and 17 doing group smoking cessation and weight loss seminars for the libraries, hotels, and for corporations. From when I was like 17 years old. So it just grew and grew. And when I graduated college, when I was in college, I was still doing the stage shows. I was working with athletes and I was working with students. I'd hypnotize five people at a time in my dorm room. And I did this so many times. I worked with so many teams and so many athletes and so many students that in about 3 weeks, I made $25,000 just from seeing people in my dorm room. I graduated college and opened up my first office when I was 22. So right after I graduated, I opened up my first office. And now here I am today. I have a waiting list of people to come and see me. I choose only the clients I want to choose. I travel around the world. I speak. I still do stage shows. And coming up, I'm going to Texas, Florida, Arizona, St. Louis, Florida. I'll be in Florida. I'll probably come and see you when I'm in Florida. So you know, a lot of stuff coming up, and I feel like I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed.
Okay. Well, and that's interesting. The first time I hypnotized somebody was high school. There was a book called Hypnosis for Change. I can't remember who wrote it. And I remember reading it, and I read it to somebody, and it worked. Scared me to death. Didn't really follow it up for 15 years, but interesting. Well, that leads into what one of the things I was going to ask you about. You work with high performance athletes, and you know, it's something I do a lot. I don't do as much of now as I used to do a lot of sports and performance. And what's always interesting is when I'm teaching people how to do sports and performance hypnosis, they always say, "Do I need to know a lot about the sport that you're doing?"
Right.
And I always use the analogy. I go, you know what's interesting? I'll just tell you my story and then we'll get yours. I go, I work great with golfers. I hate golf. I get my eyes out before I play around. I respect it. You know, I played it and it's not my thing. You know, I work better with golfers than martial artists. Mm-hmm. And I'm a martial artist. It's just kind of an interesting thing. So I just want, how'd you get in, like what you said, how you got into working with athletes? I always think they make the best freaking hypnosis clients because they're taking commands.
They do.
So just tell us about that and what you do and how you structure it.
Yeah, so athletes and salespeople, and those are the two main categories I work with people. And I remember attending a marketing conference last year, Will, and Susie, I forgot what her last name was, but she sold like $4 million of an online program teaching people how to make their dog come when they're called. And she said, what you want to do is you want to go an inch wide and a mile deep. And I had a really hard struggle with that because we were always taught to be generalist, right? You have to work with every single problem that comes in your door, whether it's nail biting, weight loss, bedwetting, smoking cessation, stress reduction, anxiety, whatever, fears, phobia, whatever it is. So I started to do some research into the sports niche, and I saw that sports is very similar to sales. And I started to do a lot of research into performance anxiety. Now, performance anxiety could mean sports performance, sales performance, sexual performance. So I had people start calling me, and I went deep into this niche, Will. I went so deep into this niche. I took weight loss off my website. I took all the other things off my website, and I just put anxiety specialist. And then I listed the type of people under anxiety specialist that I see: sports, sales, entrepreneurs, business owners. And those are the people I started getting. When I did a TED talk about 2 years ago, and that gets me a lot of clients and from all over the world. So I started getting so many people into my practice. I had to come up with a structure where I could see twice as many people, because as you might find in your practice and a lot of other hypnotists might find in their practice, if you have to make people wait too long, it gives them too much time to think. And thinking is never a good thing in a buying decision. You want people to make the decision on emotion. So, and it's that initial decision to sign up that really gets people hooked. So when I have an 8-week waiting list or a 10-week waiting list, I would have a lot of clients that would decide after 8 or 10 weeks they don't want to do the program anymore, usually because they found something else that worked for them. So I had to come up with a way where I could see 2 or 3 times as many people. So I started doing biweekly programs. I structured a program. I see people over 2 months, and I'm seeing them once biweekly. So that way I can see, and I see about 20 to 25 people a week. So I'm able to see 40 to 50 clients at one time, where before I'd only be able to see 20 clients at a time because I'm seeing them weekly. So it would be 20 clients at a month. So now I can see twice as many. And in between the sessions, I'm doing online programs, and I have them log into these online programs. And this is what you're going to love. They're all NLP based, because there are hypnosis sessions in there. But then I say, now there's these quick boosters, and I don't call it NLP. I call it something different. I call them like mental roadblocks, thought stoppers, like 60-second confidence boost. And I give really crafty titles to these things. I don't even know what this NLP technique is called. You'll know, but you know the one when I think it's like a new behavior generator. When you float into somebody else, or another one, when you anchor good feelings down with a fist. So I called that the 30K a day exercise, because there was a sales guy that I worked with. And after teaching him this, he was only doing $3,000 a day in sales. He was sold radio ads, and he was only selling $3,000 a day in radio ads. Well, I taught him this like 60-second exercise to do before each sales call. And he did it, and in 3 weeks, his average went up from $3,000 a day to $30,000 a day. So I call it the 30K a day, the 60 seconds to 30K a day exercise. So when I started titling these things, people started hearing about them. They're like, this is going to make me more money. So now I can charge whatever I want for these sessions. So I'm very blessed, Will. I get to choose who I want. Now most people apply to work with me. I have an application process that people go through because I'm not charging them $200-$300. I'm charging them between $1,500 and $2,000 usually. And that's for an 8-week program, but it's only 4 hours of work for me. So, you break that down, I'm making probably $500 an hour, I think, something like that. So that's how I structure my programs so I can see more people, and also people just buy the programs I have online. But for those hypnotists who are just starting out or who don't have an online program, you don't need one. You don't need one to do this. Offer something different. Offer a coaching call between your sessions. What I do is I have people open up their cell phones, and this is a good way to get people to turn their cell phone on airplane mode. I say, take out your cell phone and put it on voice memos, and we're gonna record these couple of techniques that I'm teaching you so you can listen to them anytime you want. And this is like magic for people, and that's the program. They're getting a personalized recording, right? So that's kind of how I structure the programs, and I equate the sales mindset and the entrepreneur mindset very closely to the athletic mindset. So it goes hand in hand. And I just had today a woman, she came in for smoking cessation because I still do smoking cessation. And I'm talking to her about how I do all this other sales work with salespeople. And she said, well, that's interesting. She said, I'm a regional sales rep for insert cell phone company there. She said, and we look to hire people all the time to come in and motivate our downline. So opening up these connections with people. So if you guys who are listening, if you follow me, you're going to see I have a lot of stuff that's coming out in the next couple of months. I'm almost finished with my first book that I'm writing. I'm pioneering a movement. It's called the Success Happens Movement. And it's all stuff that, you know, letting your reputation do your marketing for you. I find that's a really big thing. With NLP, Will, you know, do you find, because this, I used to get caught up, and I wonder if other people do too, with how do you mix hypnosis and NLP, right? Because I've seen people do NLP and their induction is close your eyes and shut the hell up and play this picture in your mind. And as a hypnotist, you know, and people see my stage show, so they're expecting people like flop over. How do you use hypnosis with NLP or how do you get past the hypnotic induction for effective change?
Well, that's interesting because that always comes up. In fact, I just taught those classes. And yeah. It's like, well, how do you know when to do NLP and how do you know when to do hypnosis? And I'm always arrogant enough to say, well, if you have a good instructor, you're going to learn you can't separate them.
Right, right, right.
And if I could, in a perfect world, I would tell people, I encourage people to take an NLP course before they learn hypnosis.
Agreed. Well,
I run into a lot of people, they take an hypnosis, and then I almost have to rip out a lot of stuff out of their heads, so then they're more of a blank slate. Because what NLP does is give you a meta structure, as we call it, right? Then there's times you want to do a nice deep induction, and there's times, as you well know, it's just, especially with athletes, they're always playing movies in their minds. Mm-hmm. It's what they do. So do good entrepreneurs. I'm an actor. It's my big hobby. We're always running this stuff in our minds. So, you know, it just comes with time, as you're right. Finding. But the great thing about the NLP techniques themselves is people are busy. You know, if you're always saying, well, here's a beautiful 40-minute, you know, recording. I know a lot of people are looking at it and go, when do I got 40 minutes?
Yeah.
They'll look at you and go, can I do this on the drive home?
Yes, all the time, all the time.
And so I go, no, but I can show you this, this, and this, you know.
Yep, and it's interesting because when the NLP that I do with people, it's that quick change. And I say, you know, before we do the hypnosis, now they don't realize we're doing hypnosis the entire session, but before we do the hypnosis, I want to show you these couple of techniques that work really well for building confidence or for getting in the zone or for eliminating self-doubt. And in going through this, I can't tell you how many times I've heard before, why didn't my therapist teach me this? And there's one really interesting one. A woman came in to see me recently, and she has these really self-destructive pictures that she makes in her head. And again, this isn't sports or business. This is purely anxiety-based. But her therapist sent her to me, and she has all these self-destructing images that she makes, and she described it. And I said, would you like to learn a technique that can kind of make those pictures go away? And we just did like changing of submodalities. Somebody else came in and, oh, my husband cheated on me. And every time we make love, all I can hear is the other woman saying, give me more, give me more. And I said, where's that voice coming from in your head? She's like, it's like right here. I said, okay, can you take it out and just throw it across the room? She goes, okay. I said, can you put Elmo's voice in? Give me more, baby. Yeah, slap me, give me more. And can you see Elmo's face? And she cracked up laughing. She said, Dan, I have never laughed at that. This has happened 5 years ago. I've never been able to laugh at that in 5 years. That's a transformative moment. You know, I almost said screw the hypnosis, which I don't want to say because that is a big part of my process. But, you know, these transformative moments of change, and I always surprise people. I have a very different way of working with people where I kind of take people by surprise with certain things. I incorporate a lot of laughter into my sessions. I incorporate a lot of shock value into my sessions, and I shock the hell out of people. Not with shock inductions. And I learned a lot of this from you, Will. And it's okay to expose a little bit of yourself. And you know, I don't hide this. I don't go paraded around either. But I see a lot of women, and I have a lot of women come to me for certain problems, and they say, you know, I feel very comfortable with you. You know, and they'll even tell me, I've gone to see other therapists or hypnotists before, and I say, well, I'm not a therapist. They say, I know, but you know, I've seen other people like you before, and I don't feel comfortable with them. I don't know why. And then they'll see a picture as they're walking into my office, and they'll say, is that your brother? I say, no, that's my boyfriend. They said, that's why we feel comfortable with you. And you know, that's a big part. I've been also working with a lot of people who have identity issues ever since I was in college. I was president of the Gay Straight Alliance in college, and I went to a Catholic college, and it was very difficult for them to embrace, and very difficult for people to embrace themselves. And I do see a lot of teenagers with identity issues, and that's part of it, Will, is you have to, I feel at least, you have to open up a little part of yourself to show, you know what, I'm human too, and I know how you feel. And it goes, feel, felt, found, or you, like me, have probably felt the same way before. You know, it goes back to that whole thing and being able to relate to people. And I find that just being open and honest and genuine with people, not dumping their whole life on your whole life onto them. I've had my friends say to me before, Dan, do you ever want to hypnotize your clients and say, okay, now it's your time to shut up and listen to me? I say, yeah, I can't tell you how many times I wanted to do that, but I don't. That wouldn't be good for business. But exposing a part of yourself and saying, you know what, this is who I am, and being proud of it, and using your past and certain parts of your life and using that to build who you are in spite of that, not because of that, but in spite of that. And I'm getting a tattoo right here on my forearm soon, and it's a compass. And around the compass, it's going to say, we choose our own direction. And I get really emotional when I talk about this. I'll do my best not to today. But growing up in a family of alcoholism and drug addiction, you know, I am statistically more likely to go to a bar room after my office tonight or go into the back alley of somewhere and shoot heroin into my veins. I'm statistically, I was told, more likely to go do that. And instead of letting that form who I am and form my identity, I chose to take a different path. I chose to take a different route. And I am who I am in spite of those other people around me who I saw. So I could form my own identity and say, I don't want to be like that. This is what I want my interest to be. And I use those same experiences to help my clients through powerful times as well. And I find that being open, I have clients that say to me all that. In fact, it just happened today. A woman called me and said, Dan, I went to see another hypnotist. And I said, well, I know who that other hypnotist is. I said, I would never say anything bad about them. I said, but our sessions are very different. Our ways that we use are very different. And, you know, if you want to continue seeing them, that's fine. But I'll be more than happy to talk to you as well. And I have a lot of people say, just, I can relate to your story much better. And that's because I'm not always concerned about being Mr. Professional all the time. I'm not trying to stir the pot either, but I want people to know I'm human, and it's like two friends working together to create a common goal, right? And that's how I want to look at my clients. And that's how I want my clients to look at me as well, as a friend that they're with helping them to achieve this goal.
Cool. It's like that story of they're identical twins. This is a true story, identical twin boys. Father, I don't know why the mother left, but the mother was gone. Father was alcoholic, abusive, go down the list, a criminal. He goes to prison. I think the boys were 14 or 15. So they separate the boys and they go into foster care. Anyway, they did a follow-up about 20 years later. Well, the one son's in prison. He was an alcoholic, drug addict, armed robbery. He's in prison, like his father. And when they talked to him, of course, first thing he says, how could I not, given my background? Then they found the other brother who was married, a professional, very successful. And they ask him about that. And he goes, well, how could I not end up like this, given my background? Right. And everything else was the same. And I come from a background of abuse, of substance abuse. And, you know, and I'm always, when I teach people, I encourage strategically sharing parts of yourself. That's
yes.
What I call it, right?
Because, yes.
And once people go, oh, is that right or wrong? I go, well, I always say, my dear friend Tony Robbins, if you've ever met him, he's always telling his flaws. It makes him human.
Right.
Not a 6'7" gigantic now billionaire, but it's like, you know, hey, I screwed this up, I screwed that up, and it makes him more approachable. And I fear in our field, sometimes there's the people that everything has to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, people have asked me before, when do you cross the line? And, you know, there is a very fine line. And they say, you know, I want to tell my clients about this without divulging too much about myself. And I've, you know, just like I have all throughout college, I've had a lot of hypnotists come up to me and say, you know, we could tell there is something different about you, and you know, we know, and it's okay, and I think you know too. And I say, and it's okay. But there's certain people that don't want to reveal so much about themselves, and they'll ask, you know, how do I reveal this without revealing it was me? And I say, well, you've always had a client that have had that's had that problem, a friend, you know. My friend who experienced this. I had a client who came in, and use those to tell your story. And it goes back to, I know how you feel. I've had many clients that felt that way before, and they have found that when to build that rapport. Now, I want to mention this as well. A lot of people stop and say, you know, how much, when you're sharing, how much is too much? If I had a fight with my spouse or something like that, there's a fine line between telling to relate and telling to complain and bitch and moan. And people don't want to hear that. People don't want to hear you complain. But people aren't paying you to hear your problems. They're paying you so that you can help them work through their own issues, right? So again, there is a very fine line there as to where you expose too much or what you expose. And a lot of it comes with experience. And I have had some people that I could tell, I told a story and it was like a fart in church. It didn't go over well. And I see, you know, either it's that person or it's the story. And sometimes I say to myself, okay, Dan, just reel it in. And I have to tell myself that sometimes. And I think we all do. And it's just like, you know, when I'm working with people, I dress like this. I dress with a button down and not a sport coat. This is like a track jacket. And I usually wear jeans because the people I'm working with, they're athletes, and it's a better way to build rapport. And I've had people say, why don't you wear like a suit and tie? It makes my clients feel uncomfortable. I've done it before. And they say, why are you all dressed up? So there's these different parts of us that, you know, I really think it's good to share these parts of ourselves, but also just kind of put a limit and some boundaries on how much you share, and keep in mind it can always be about somebody else or a client who had this issue as well.
Right. Well, in one way, I always say I'm blessed because of what I do with the addiction is my main specialty. Mm-hmm. I can talk about it and my addictions and everything like that. And I love that because I love the analogy. It's the cover up that always gets you in trouble.
Yeah.
And if it's out there, nobody can come back and say, yeah, didn't you drink away this and drink away that? Yeah, I messed up a couple careers, several relationships. You know, I always say I break out in spots, you know, usually all over town and eventually in jail. tell us a little bit about that success program you're developing.
All right. So this is pretty cool. I've had so many clients, Will, that have told me after I've worked with them, and I work with some celebrities as well. And I have a doctor that she sees a lot of celebrities, and she refers some celebrity clients to me. And I've even had these celebrity clients say, you know, Dan, we want more from you. Like, when are you going to come out with more? So that's when I started coming out with online programs and stuff. But it's not just about the online programs. I find it's about building a community. And building a community, like, think of the communities you're part of, okay? Like, Will, you're a part of, and you built your own community, within your NLP school, NFNLP. You built a community of people who follow you, who know you, who like you. You probably built a community of people who don't like you as well, as have I. That's fine. But a lot of my clients would say, okay, we want more from you. How do we get it? So I really struggled with this. And then I read a couple of books that it was about, and this is going to sound really weird, so forgive me for saying it like this, but to create a cult following, right? Like, you look at any world leaders, positive or negative, they all have things in common, and that is they promised a new horizon. They had this way of building power, and they had a theme that is very difficult to reject. So I implemented all these things, and it took me a while to figure it out. And I said, well, what do people want to follow? People want to follow a movement. So I put together, it's called the Success Happens Movement. And, you know, the bumper sticker, can I say SH? Can I say that? Okay.
Come on.
All right.
You know.
So the bumper sticker, shit happens, right? I think that's from Forrest Gump. So shit happens. I thought success happens. And I said, okay, so that's a cool title of something. I said, but you know, what if we made this into a movement, like the Success Happens Movement? I said, that has a lot of power behind it. And this is fairly new. But so I came up with a free Facebook community, and it's the Success Happens movement. And every day we have daily inspiration in the form of an inspirational quote or an affirmation. And then on Fridays, we have Reflection Fridays, where I'll do like a Facebook Live or post a video of a reflective question that you can ask yourself that will carry you throughout the weekend. And I'll tell you, this in 3 days caught on fire. Like, there are hundreds of people sharing these posts. There are hundreds of people that are liking and commenting on it. And so this will ultimately flow into a Success Happens Movement paid membership. And they're going to be getting three different things from me each month. And when you're creating a membership site, you never want to overwhelm people. So, like, think of the KISS model, keep it super simple. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm taking just a very simple concept, an idea, and developing a community around it. And I'll tell you, in the past this has only been going on for like 4 or 5 days, but it is taking off, my friend, and it is huge. So my advice to people who are listening, make a community, form a community around your brand, around your practice, or around a product, or around a specialty that you have. And become known for that. There's a million hypnotists doing a million different things. And, you know, the master, was it the jack of all trades, master of none?
Right.
We were all trained to pretty much be the jack of all trades. And you know what? That's a good thing. You can be. If someone comes in to help them and they need help stop biting their nails, and the next person comes in for weight loss, the next person comes in for smoking, the next person comes in for erectile dysfunction, you should be able to work on those things. But does it mean you have to? No, it doesn't. So when you choose a niche, or when you choose one thing and you direct your focus into that one thing, that's what you're going to get a lot more of. So I'm directing my focus into the Success Happens movement. As I said, I'm finishing my book right now. It's all about forming hypnotic connections with people. It's called How to Hypnotically Connect with Anyone. You know, these are things that I'm very, very passionate about. And when you live through your passion and you put a lot of work into it, and so, you know, someone said this to me at the convention. They said, "Hey, are you the $250,000 guy who only works 5 hours a week?" I said, "Nope, I'm the $250,000 guy who works his ass off." And I'll tell you, it is possible to make 6-figure income, a 5-figure income, doing hypnosis, doing NLP. But I think there's a structure and a system to doing it. And my structure might not be good for everybody, and everybody's structure may not be good for me. But once you find what works for you, and you start to build that into a business, you'll see that, you know what, it's profitable. It helps people. And it creates a really good sense of satisfaction, fulfillment, and purpose. And that's what it does for me. I love helping people in my office. I was just a consultant on a, don't laugh, please, on a TV dating show. And all with hypnotic connections and everything. And they said, "We can say your name on this show and everything. We can publicize your name on this show." I said, no. Now, a lot of people I know, they see, publicize my name. But you know what? I don't need to be recognized. I used to want to be recognized for these things, but I don't need to be recognized anymore. I know that in my community, I'm recognized. In my community, I'm important, as are the other people in my community. And I know this. I don't need that recognition and that acknowledgement from everybody anymore. It used to bother me that I didn't get it more. But now I know that it's more of the feeling that comes from within. Within me and my purpose of helping other people, but also being able to live a comfortable life with that as well. So
it's funny. It reminds me of two things real quick. One is my friend, Dr. Butler, points out, you know, all doctors are trained the same at the beginning, right? And yet the more specialized they become, the richer they become. And, you know, the heart surgeons, the brain surgeons, but he pointed out, you know who one of the highest paid doctors in America is? He's a hand surgeon. That's all he does.
I believe it.
If you were, you know, on a football team, you know, if you were a Brady and something's wrong with your hand, you'll shell out $500,000.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and the niche gets bigger. And then the other thing real quick, I love when you said that because I was listening to a guy, internet marketer guy, and I'm going to be interviewing some internet marketers about how awesome. They use hypnotic techniques and how we as hypnotists can do that. I was expanding out into the entrepreneurial world because of the addiction thing. I'm working with all these entrepreneurs. But he said the great thing is when you get to the point when you realize what you really want to be is niche famous. Because only certain people recognize you. You can go to dinner. He goes, one of my friends, and this guy's a multimillionaire, obviously, the guy that runs ClickFunnels, he goes, they can't go out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, only one city in the country can they hang out, and that's New York. Everywhere else, they got to be, he goes, I can go anywhere. And the few geeks that come up, I'm happy to talk to.
Yeah.
And that, I'm like, that makes sense.
Russell, it was his book that I read about the creating a movement. And it was his book I read about creating that cult-like following. And I don't mean it like a cult-like following, like I'm going to get people to drink my Kool-Aid, but that's what we have to do as hypnotists. We have to get people to drink our Kool-Aid. And, you know, the one of the people who called me today to set up an appointment or a program with me said, you know, I saw this other hypnotist and he was like 20 years old or 21 years old. And I just had a really hard time taking him seriously. I said, you know what? I know how he feels because I was there too. I just turned 30 and
you're
there
old,
are still, the, yeah, now I feel like an old blowhard dirtbag. No, but you know, someone just came into my office yesterday, Will, and said, you must be about 40, 45 years old. I said, can I just ask you a question? I said, why do you think that? She said, well, you have this, you've just done so much. She said, you're writing a book. You put together all these programs. You've traveled the world. She goes, you can't do that in 25 or 30 years. I said, I'm only 30. She goes, you are? I said, yeah. She said, I would have never known that. I thought you were like at least 40 or 40, 45 years old. I said, do I look 45? She said, eh. So.
Wait.
It's, you know, but going back to the young hypnotist, you know, I'd have people where they wouldn't take me seriously when I was 15 years old and going to do a hypnosis show. I've had doors slammed in my face. I've had phones hung up on me when they found out I was 15 or 16. But at 16, 17 years old, I had more experience than some of these people who are 50 or 60 doing hypnosis. Because, you know, hypnosis for some people is a retirement career. It's a way for people, some people to make money in retirement. They retire from their jobs and then they fulfill their passion and of helping people and being a hypnotist. And there's nothing wrong with that, just as there's nothing wrong with starting off as a hypnotist. I think, I really do think this profession is on the cusp and we're at a tipping point, Will. And a big part of this is we have to learn how to modernize our approaches. And we have to learn to be more open with not just different perspectives and mindsets and schools of thought, but open to how we get clients as well into working with people differently. There's a shift coming. And where there are going to be some people who don't want to work with anybody one-on-one anymore, or they don't want to work with anybody face-to-face in an office anymore. And I have a training center now, and this is my office. I still see 6 or 7 or 8 people here a day. I teach classes. Last night I taught a self-hypnosis class. I taught a class of hypnotists, several classes of hypnotists here, actually. But, you know, there are the times and there's the people who they don't want to travel to learn anymore. And we have to be open to that. And we have to be ready for that. And that's where, you know, you look at doing webinars, doing podcasts, writing ebooks. I really think we're going through a huge shift, Will, and we have to be ready for it. And based on the people that I'm talking to, a lot of people are resistant to it instead of open to it. And that's an issue. That resistance is what's going to ultimately lead to their failure or their demise in the profession of hypnosis. And I really think this openness has to be there for us to grow and thrive and prosper and succeed. You know, at the NGH convention, Paul Ramsey at the instructors meeting was talking about using your smartphone and all the different ways you can use your smartphone. And you know what? He is right on, and not just using your smartphone, but your client's smartphone, as we were talking about. And in doing this, it really is going to set you apart, because there's many more people who are not doing that than who are doing that. And so those are the clients I want. Those are clients I attract. If someone comes to me and they say, I don't do anything online, I don't own a computer, I don't own a smartphone, you know what I tell them? I say, unfortunately, we're not going to be a good fit, because that's my approach does not accommodate that approach anymore. So, and people may disagree with me. You're feel free to disagree, but in the success that I have had, it's by following the path and keeping up to date on all the other things that we should be doing. I want to bring up a conversation you and I had at Solid Gold, which actually it goes back to something else we were talking about a few minutes ago, and that is exposing a kind of a vulnerable side of yourself. I was giving the workshop at the Solid Gold weekend for the National Guild of Hypnotists. And it was on the Friday when everyone comes in and checks in and everything. It was about, I think, about stage hypnosis or giving presentations or something. Yeah. Well, I was using a remote for the laptop for my PowerPoint. And right next to the remote, there's a magic marker. And I had, you know, I was talking about how I'm a little bit of a goofball and stuff. And about a half hour later, I go and I pick up what I think is the remote to change the screen on the PowerPoint. And I go like this. And I look at Celeste Hackett. I goes, why isn't this damn thing working? And Brenda, I think it was Brenda Titus. She was sitting in the front row. She goes, Dan. This was in front of about 100 people. She goes, Dan, that's not the remote. That's a magic marker. And I looked down and I said, oh, whoops. And everybody laughed. Now, you said to me, Will, after that, you said, that was brilliant. How you said, if that was on purpose, that was brilliant. And I said, that wasn't on purpose. That was a total accident. But I want to get your perspective as to, if I did that on purpose, why you think that was a good move to make.
It makes you human, you know, and especially with that crowd, because it's an older crowd, and there are a lot of people, they're intimidated by technology. And if a young, hip, slick guy like you, to use older terminology, if you could make a mistake, that lets them know, guess what, I can screw up too.
Yeah.
You know, and I just thought, it's like, because it made you human. And you didn't freak out. You didn't go, you just went, oh, that's right. And you just went, like, you know, and yeah. And you, so it was, how about this? It was subconsciously brilliant.
So I want to share this with
thank you. Thank your subconscious mind.
Yeah. Handshake, subconscious handshake.
Go, girl.
Yes. Yeah. Holla. So I was thinking about what you said, and I was doing another presentation a couple of months later, or a couple of weeks later, excuse me, again in Vegas. I was thinking of that, and I said, how great would it be for me to actually choreograph that in? And would you know, I choreographed like something very similar into that. And I totally messed up on the choreographed part of it, which again made it look like another big mistake that I had made. And I'm like, and there I'm thinking to myself, son of a bitch, it didn't work like I wanted it to work out. And people came up to me and they said, hey, Dan, that's really funny about how, but I think exposing a part of yourself, and at the same event, I made this mistake. There's another mistake that I really did make. And this one actually was really bad. I was on a panel of very successful stage hypnotists. There was Terry Stokes. There was Mark Savard. There was Rich Guzzi. There was William Mitchell. There was Jason Lynette. And I'm on this panel, Sean Michael Andrews, on this panel, Kevin Lapine, of all these like famous stage hypnotists. And I kind of feel like, well, who the hell am I to be on this panel, right? And we're going down the line of each like telling our stories. And I said into the microphone, well, when I was in high school, I really wanted to get AIDS. And as I got A's more and more, and I didn't say A's, I said AIDS. And then Michael DeShalit was in the front row. He held up a sign that says, you can't say that. And I stopped. I goes, what did I just say? And now there's about 50 people watching this. And oh, and Marshall Silver was there too. And I held up the microphone. I go, what did I just say? And Marshall Silver looks down. He goes, that would be a great way to lose weight. And I said, what did I say? And they said, and they all screamed out, you said you wanted AIDS. And I said, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. And I took the microphone. I banged it up against my head about 4 or 5 times. I will tell you, I didn't mean to do that. It just something slipped. And I couldn't believe I said that. I was so embarrassed. And that's in a time where I literally felt like I had to put my friggin' foot in my mouth. And that's where people thought I said it purposefully. People thought I said it on purpose. And I didn't. It was a total mistake. And I was beating myself up about it. And Michael came up and he was like rubbing my shoulders. He goes, good work, bud. And I'm like, Mike, I really didn't mean to say that. He's like, that's okay. He goes, you know, it broke the ice. And he said, it showed people that that everybody here has a good sense of humor. So it's these times, you know, if you go and even in your sessions, you screw something up. Guess what? Nobody's going to know. Nobody's really going to care unless you really F them up. Then if you F them up, they'll care. But but right. If you make a mess up, they're not going to care.
Right. Cool.
So sorry, okay. I know I went off onto a rant. Sorry about that.
No. And I see a shift in our field also. And well, you've heard me talk about it for a couple years now. And it's like, and I always think of the blockbuster phenomenon. Just because you're big doesn't mean you're going to last. It's a evolution or extinction.
Yeah.
And when, you know, you can get a master's degree from Harvard and never set foot on campus.
Yeah.
And the degree does not say it's remote. It just says Harvard, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody, it's like, and, you know, I'm making a concerted effort, stepping my game up, trying to do more and keep it more current.
And you know what, Will? People notice that they should admire that. There's people in this profession who I really do see they're moving forward. They're pioneering. You know, you're one of them. Jason Lynette is another. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I'm another one. And we're taking what we had and we're making it work differently. And as it works differently, in a lot of situations, it also works better. And we're just three of those people. There's a lot more of these people as well. But my point is the people who are adaptive, the people who are assimilating to these changes, these are the people that, you know what, they're making a good business. They're successful. And if they're not, hell, they're certainly tricking a lot of people.
Well, it's like when we launched Live Free Training, which is the addiction recovery program. It's all online.
Yeah.
It's all online. You know, it's videos every day. You watch a video, educational video, hypnosis then installs it, the book to read, several other little things. And in a live class every day.
Yeah.
And it's funny when I tell it to people, right? And it's, I get one of two responses. That's interesting. Or never work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ones that say that's interesting. And I remember talking to my daughter. She's a little bit older than you. She's 35, tech person from the Navy. Now she works in the defense, contractor. She goes, that's a good idea, because all of her friends probably wouldn't want to go away to treatment, but they'll do it online. They live online.
Yeah.
You know, everything we do is mobile on this. You know, I hooked up with this entrepreneur. He's the main guy, and everything's mobile. And, you know, I'm learning, this is helping me, because it's like, 60% of the people watch everything on their cell phone from our program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so that's helping me, you know, and I've, now that the program's up and running, I can step back and do the other things I love. So
Bingo. You hit the nail on the head. And you know what, Will, because I don't work with addicts. The only addiction I really work with is porn addiction. And
you mean the guys with splash guards on their computer?
I tell people, I say, you're sitting in the poncho section. You better watch out. I really do work with porn addiction. I have a lot of therapists in my area send people to me for this. And these aren't there are things I say work on, and I do, but I don't advertise them because I don't want to be, that's not the niche I want. And you know, the people I've worked with on that, they're very fascinating, interesting people. I love all my porn clients, and just because they bring a different perspective. But for other addictions, I've referred several people to your online program, and a part of it is selling the online portion of how it's going to work. And I don't know if any of them had signed up for it, but, you know, this is how a lot of people ask me, well, how do you sell Zoom sessions? We're on Zoom right now. And I would say about 30% of the work I do with people is international. And it's all on Zoom when we're doing one-on-one. So I don't even have to come to my office. But some people say, you know, we only want to work with you one-on-one. Here's the thing. If you offer one-on-one, that's usually going to be people's preferred method currently, right now. I always tell people this, other hypnotists this, if you sell a red car, but you don't want to sell red cars anymore, you want to sell black cars, people are always going to want to buy the red car just because you're selling it. So if you only want to sell black cars, only offer black cars. If you want to sell only yellow cars, only offer yellow cars. So that's why there's certain programs where people will come in and say, can I work with you for weight loss? I say, no longer see people one-on-one individually for weight reduction. I have an 8-week online program for that. It's just like working with me one-on-one. But they'll say, why don't you work with people privately? I said, because of my travel schedule, I cannot work with you in the capacity I need to work with you, because I need to work with you every week. And because of my travel schedule, I'm only here once every 2 weeks, and that's not what you need. I'd be doing you a disservice. So my online program is just as effective as working with me one-on-one. Yeah, and you have to, so that's how you have to sell that. That you can't offer that, or if you do offer the one-on-one coaching or the one-on-one sessions, it has to be of higher value. So that way it motivates more people to sign up for your online program as well. And right. I'm not telling you this as advice. I know you know this, but other hypnotists who this might be a new concept to, or other business people this might be a new concept to.
Well, the other thing as we wrap up, I was going to say, I was glad this year to see that there was a couple of, at the Guild and at HypnoThoughts, there were some sessions geared for underserved populations, as we would say in psychology, you know, the African-American, Hispanic, LGBT communities. And I think that's a way it's an underserved population for a reason. Mm-hmm. If they're there, they have money. I said, I remember I was doing stuff with Georgina Cannon up in Toronto, and her office was right by Boys Town up there in Toronto. I said, you could run $1 million weight loss clinic right here. I see the ad. Yeah. I used to be a fat old queen. You know, now I'm this. And she goes, you couldn't run that ad. I go, oh, yes, I could.
Now, I have never paraded on stage in my shows and saying, I'm gay, or what some people have told me is say, I'm here, I'm queer, and I'm ready to go, right? And I know that's going to offend some people, and I apologize, but I've never been that guy. I've just been Dan, or Dan Candell. And now, I've had many hypnotists approach me and say, you would be great going into the gay market, like going into doing gay clubs, cabaret nights, gay bars. You would be great with that. I've had so many hypnotists tell me that. But I also don't want to pigeonhole myself into that, where I've been doing this for more than half my life now. I've been doing it for 16 years. I don't want to pigeonhole myself in that atmosphere. And I would love to work in that. And in fact, when I'm going down to Arizona, and when I go down to Arizona, I'm testing out the gay bar market. Crack whatever jokes you want to crack. I'm testing out the gay club scene.
Well, I'm sure this isn't the first time.
But you know, there's also some agencies that have approached me that say, you know, Dan, if you paraded the fact that you were gay, if you made it known, or you put jokes behind it, then we could sell your shows a lot better. Here's the thing, Will. I've done that a couple of times, and it crashed and burned. Because then, and this was in like the college market. So then what happens is there are some guys who are afraid to volunteer, because they're unsure about what I'm going to do. And I've had my dad say to me many times before, because my dad sees many of my shows. He says, Dan, you know, how come you leave like the stereotypical guys up on stage dancing last? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, aren't people going to look at that and saying you're doing that because you're gay? I said, no, I'm doing that because they're friggin' funny. I said, and it's funny to have a football player up there and the lead actor in the musical dancing together. That's friggin' hysterical. I said, it would be more sexist if I had two girls up there doing it. It would be more sexist if I had a guy and a girl up there. It wouldn't be as funny. But when it all of a sudden becomes known, and maybe this is my own insecurity, I don't know. When it becomes more known, I'm gay, and I'm going to bring guys up, and I'm going to have them do stuff that looks like I'm picking on them because I'm gay and they're straight, right? Or not, whatever. I see that being a little bit of an issue, because it's happened a couple of times before when guys have been resistant when they do find that out. So that's why I don't parade it. But anyway.
Well, no, that makes sense. I know a couple years ago, I was approached, I got a call. Hey, do you still do stage shows? I go, occasionally, you know, where is it? It was right here in Sarasota. And I went, yeah. They go, can you do an adult show? I said, yeah, I like doing adult shows. That's fine, you know. And so there was some club in Sarasota. So I said, well, I went up to see it. I should have known it was only open on Friday and Saturday, right?
Oh, boy.
Up there, and I meet the guy, and we walk in. I'm showing, and I'm so oblivious, you know. I'm like, do, 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 do. I go, where do you want to do the show? So he shows me there's the dance area. He goes, we could do it here, and they had a good sound system. That's all I wanted, right? And I'm like, yeah, we could do a show. Then I found out it was a swingers club, right? And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And my first thought was, well, this is one group you can't offend.
Yeah, right? yeah.
But I chose not to do it because of a lot of reasons. One is that would, like you say, it would niche me in the wrong way, I think.
Yeah.
So there's a girl who does, she does stage hypnosis now. She's a professional comedian, and she does she has a specific act for those clubs.
Yes. Yes.
Buddhist cruise and all that. And so she wanted to learn stage hypnosis. I go, this would work for you. And now she does it all over.
Yeah.
But that's, but like you said, what you just said would be a perfect example. If you went down that way, you, that might be all you could do then.
Yeah. And you know, how do you market that? Do you put on your, I'm the gay hypnotist. Like, what the hell? You know? So anyway, just food for thought. And to Will's listeners out there, you know, I appreciate you guys listening to me and hearing my story. And I hope you agree with a lot of the things that I said. And feel free to reach out to me personally and let me know what you thought of the things I said. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me. Now, hey, sometimes when people email me, it takes me like a week or two to get back to them. That's because I'm traveling. I'm overwhelmed. I forward a lot of my messages to my assistants. But the ones that I want to return personally, if I don't return them right away, it doesn't mean I'm being a jerk. I just want to have enough time to go through and process and respond in the way that you deserve enough time.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Wonderful.